Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
First, Mario Ritter tells us the latest news related to Syria and how civil war there may affect hundreds of thousands of civilians.
Russian airstrikes in Syria have helped Syrian government forces in their offensive against rebels. Forces loyal to Syrian President Bashar al-Assad have moved within 25 kilometers of the country's border with Turkey for the first time since August 2013. Activists and rebel commanders say the offensive has left moderate rebel groups disorganized and unable to fight effectively. The fighting has also pushed more Syrian civilians toward the border area. Turkish officials warn that the Russian air attacks and heavy fighting in Syria could force as many as 600,000 civilians to flee the country. Turkey has said it wants the civilians to stay on the Syrian side of the border. The Turkish Deputy Prime Minister said, "Our objective for now is to keep this wave of migrants on the other side of Turkey's border as much as is possible, and to provide them with the necessary services there." However, a Syrian Arab Red Crescent official told VOA Monday that at least 25,000 refugees have crossed the border in Onkupinar, along the far western part of the border. There are reports that some Kurdish groups are working with forces loyal to the Assad government. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights says the Kurdish People's Protection Units, known as the YPG, entered two Sunni Arab villages near the city of Aleppo. Some rebel commanders have rejected reports that territory held by the YPG is being bombed. They also speak of what they call clear evidence that Syrian Kurdish leaders are colluding with the Syrian government. The YPG denies this. Anti-Assad rebels have held the Manag airbase near Aleppo since August of 2013. There have been unconfirmed reports suggesting that Kurdish fighters may have attacked the base. However, the YPG denies that it is working with the government. YPG commanders say their control of towns near Aleppo prevents Iranian and Shiite fighters from Lebanon's Hezbollah and Afghanistan from moving forward. The YPG says it moved Sunni Arab families who are fleeing the fighting to the Kurdish community of Afrin. The group said the refugee transfer is supposed to prove to everyone that Syria is for all its citizens. The YPG added that it is not fighting Arabs, as some media reports say. Saleh Muslim is the head of the Democratic Union Party, which controls the YPG. He told VOA that he is not sure the current government offensive would affect Syrian Kurdish hopes for semi-autonomy. He said his group would not fight Islamic State forces west of the Euphrates River unless they were working with the U.S.-led international coalition. He said his biggest concern is that Turkish forces would be pulled into the fighting. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has warned that his country will not permit Kurdish gains in northern Syria. He also said Turkey will not permit a semi-autonomous Kurdish group to gain control of Syria. On Sunday, Erdogan said the United States has to choose between Turkey and the YPG. Turkey has banned the YPG and another Kurdish group, the PYD. A European Union diplomat told VOA the situation hurts moderate militias and helps more extreme Islamist fighters in the area. I'm Mario Ritter.
Tribal leaders in eastern Afghanistan say that the government has done nothing to stop the Islamic State terror group from smuggling timber to Pakistan. Ann Ball has more on this report.
Residents of eastern Afghan provinces said the terror group has brought tree-cutting machines to the Nangarhar province. They said trucks with timber are sent to Pakistan every day. Some of the timber is also sold in the provinces. Malik Afsar is a tribal leader in Achin. He said locals working as middlemen transported the timber for the IS terror group. He added, "The government has done nothing in this regard." A provincial spokesman said, "The issue of tree cutting has not been raised with the government." But an acting agricultural director has heard reports of tree cutting. The acting director, known as Engineer Shakir, said, "Dibala is the only district where the tree cutting is still going on, and we are communicating with local elders in the district to stop it." Tree cutting and timber harvesting is against the law in Afghanistan. The country's Environmental Protection Agency says forests cover only 2% of the country. And the UN Environmental Program says forest cover has decreased by about 50% over the past 3 decades as timber smuggling has continued. In addition to profits from the sale of smuggling timber, residents said the IS terror group also recruited locals to join the group. I'm Ann Ball.
Five crew members for a chartered flight in India are suspended after permitting a Bollywood star to sing to the passengers. The Jet Airways crew let singer Sonu Nigam use the plane's announcement system in flight on January 4th. Jet Airways confirmed the suspensions after video of the airplane performance appeared online. An official said all cabin crew members from the flight have been taken off flight duty during an investigation. Reports say passengers asked Nigam to sing for them once they realized he was on the flight from Jodhpur to Mumbai. He agreed. He sang two of his popular songs over the plane's announcement system. Passengers posted video of the performance on social media. The video went viral. Government officials who learned of the incident asked the airline to take action. The incident has led to strong arguments online, both for and against the action. Supporters of the airline's decision to suspend the crew say misuse of the announcement system puts passengers at risk. But others say the concert only gave the passengers a bit of fun. You are listening to As It Is.
Scientists at America's space agency, NASA, are closely watching a 30-meter-wide asteroid that will pass close to Earth next month. We go to Jim Dresbach for more.
Experts at America's space agency, NASA, are watching a 30-meter-wide asteroid as it comes near the Earth in March. According to NASA, the asteroid has no chance of hitting Earth. It could fly as close within 17,700 kilometers of the planet on March 5th. Paul Chodos leads the space agency's Near-Earth Object Studies office. He said in a statement, "The possibilities of collision on any of the three future flyby dates are far too small to be of any real concern." This asteroid was discovered in 2013 and is named TX-68. The asteroid is about twice the size of another one that exploded over Russia in 2013. That explosion shattered glass, destroyed buildings, and injured more than 1,000 people. If an asteroid the size of TX-68 entered the Earth's atmosphere and exploded, NASA estimates it would be twice as powerful as the 2013 Russian asteroid blast. TX-68 is expected to approach the Earth again on September 28, 2017. I'm Jim Dresbach.
The leading measure of Japanese stock prices dropped more than 5% Tuesday. Bruce Alpert has more.
It was the biggest one-day loss in Japan's Nikkei stock average in nearly 3 years. In Europe, leading measures of stock prices also were lower on Tuesday. Investors across the world have a number of concerns. They include slower growth in the world economy, concerns about the financial health of big European banks, and low oil prices, according to Dick Hofshire of Fidelity Investments. Hofshire said China may help determine future share prices. If China can recover from slower growth, he believes prices will move higher. Adding to concerns is North Korea. On Tuesday, the Japanese parliament passed a resolution that criticized North Korea's decision to launch a rocket last Sunday. The resolution said the launch hurts international peace. The measure passed with no opposition. I'm Bruce Alpert.
Saudi Arabian female athletes say that sports are helping to break traditions that silence women's voices there. Marcia James has more on their story.
Women athletes in Saudi Arabia say sports are helping to break down traditions that crush the voices of many women. In the city of Jeddah, a group of basketball players is urging women and girls to get out of their homes and become active in public life. The group's members say they can do this by connecting sports to health issues. All of the players are women. Saudi Arabia is one of the richest countries in the Middle East. In many ways, Saudi Arabia is as modern as any place on earth in terms of public health services, transportation, and other infrastructure. But activists say the country has a long way to go in terms of women's rights. They say by persuading women and girls to play sports, they are working in support of good health. The activists say they also are breaking down the image of Saudi women as being silent members of their society. The Jeddah United women's team was in Malaysia recently for a game. Officials say that by playing internationally, the Saudi women improve their understanding of the world and the nations they visit. Lena Almaina heads the Jeddah United Sports Company.
We played in the United States, in Malaysia, in Jordan, and the UAE, as well as Riyadh and other cities in Saudi Arabia. So we do that locally to promote sports and internationally to also try to change stereotypes and show a different segment in Saudi Arabia.
At an event in Jeddah for disabled boys and girls, female basketball players say women's sports are increasingly popular at home. Men do not attend games. The players wear head coverings and white uniforms that extend over their arms and legs. Player Noor Gary says resisting commonly accepted ideas in Saudi Arabia requires pushing against limits without breaking them.
And it's not even against the law or against the religion. It's just people having their own beliefs and trying to close it on other people. So yeah, being open towards sports means that they have more flexibility towards other things.
Players say women's rights in Saudi Arabia have come a long way in recent years, but many freedoms, like the right to drive a car, still seem far away. Last year, women in Saudi Arabia voted for the first time. 20 women were elected into local office. Like politicians, female athletes say they believe women's sports will eventually be accepted more publicly. Deborah Parkwood is the head of the Jeddah United basketball team.
We have some great athletes here in Saudi Arabia. Some of the girls that really, they want to play harder, they want to train harder, and they would love to compete for their country internationally.
For now, players say campaigning for women's sports locally is having an immediate result on society. They say it shows mothers the good effects of physical exercise for themselves and for their children. I'm Marcia James.
This is What's Trending Today. A video of hundreds of Florida manatees has gone viral. Manatees are aquatic mammals. The friendly creatures are sometimes called sea cows, but they are actually an aquatic relative of the elephant. In the winter, the Three Sisters Springs in Crystal River, Florida, is a warm water refuge for manatees. The water temperature in the springs stays at about 71 degrees Fahrenheit or 21 degrees Celsius year-round, and visitors from around the world come to Crystal River for a chance to see the gentle animals in the wild. On Monday, though, Three Sisters Springs announced it could not permit tourists to visit. Why? Because too many manatees were in their waters. The weather in Crystal River has been unusually cold. On Monday, as many as 300 manatees sheltered close together in the clear, shallow waters of Three Sisters Springs. A short 20-second video of the hundreds of manatees in the springs went viral on Facebook, and Three Sisters Springs became a trending topic. On Tuesday, Three Sisters Springs announced it had reopened to visitors. But with expected cold temperatures, they might have to close again if more and more manatees come to shelter in their warm waters. The manatee population in Florida has increased from just 1,267 to more than 6,300 in the last 25 years. Just last month, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service proposed to downgrade the West Indian manatee from endangered to threatened. But recent media reports say that some conservation groups do not agree with that proposal. While the Florida population of manatees is growing, West Indian manatees also live in the Caribbean and Central and South America. Manatee populations in other areas may face stronger threats to their habitats. And that's what's trending today.
Alexander Hamilton was not a U.S. president, but he was one of the most important early leaders of the United States. He fought in the Revolutionary War, wrote powerful arguments to persuade the states to accept the Constitution, and helped create the country's national banking and economic system. In 1929, the Treasury Department even put Alexander Hamilton's face on the $10 bill. And in 2015, the musical Hamilton became one of the biggest shows on Broadway.
How does a bastard, orphan, son of a whore and a Scotsman, dropped in the middle of a forgotten spot in the Caribbean by Providence, impoverished and squalor, grow up to be a hero and a scholar?
But the story of Hamilton's early life did not make this legacy likely. Hamilton was born in 1755 to poor, unmarried parents in the West Indies. He was a bright child and read every book given to him in English, Latin, and Greek. Hamilton also learned a great deal about business and economics. He talked about becoming a political leader in the North American colonies. When Hamilton was 11 years old, his mother died. Hamilton got a job as an assistant bookkeeper. He learned how to keep financial records. Even though his situation was difficult, others recognized that Hamilton was smart and talented. Hamilton's boss sent him to New York. He became a student at King's College, later called Columbia University. The American Revolution gave Hamilton the chance to show his abilities. Hamilton supported the colony's War of Independence against Britain. He became an aide to the colony's lead general, George Washington. Even though Hamilton was young, in his early 20s, Washington trusted him as an excellent writer and thinker. Hamilton wrote the general's letters. He had to use all his political and communication skills to get money and supplies for the Revolutionary Army. After the Revolutionary War, Hamilton became a lawyer in New York. He used the power of his pen again, this time to defend the U.S. Constitution. Hamilton was one of the authors of the Federalist Papers. The series of newspaper articles urged the newly independent states to adopt the Constitution and create a strong central government. After the states agreed to ratify the Constitution, George Washington became the country's first president. He asked Hamilton to be the first Secretary of the Treasury. The role of Secretary of the Treasury was critical in the early days of the new nation. America's most urgent problem was figuring out ways to pay its debts. The country had borrowed or promised a lot of money during the Revolutionary War. Hamilton proposed a national bank. Congress approved the idea in 1791. The bank had $10 million in capital. It could lend the government money and pay off state debts. Hamilton's system also created a federal system to collect taxes. But not everyone accepted Hamilton's views. Many of President Washington's advisors, called his cabinet, opposed Hamilton. Opponents expressed many objections to Hamilton's Bank of the United States. Generally, members of Congress from the northern states supported the idea, while those from southern states opposed it. Another political leader, Thomas Jefferson, said the bank exceeded the powers of the Constitution. Hamilton defended the bank. He argued for a broad interpretation of the Constitution. He thought it permitted the federal government to do what it needed to do to strengthen the country's economic system. Hamilton largely won his political arguments. He became the leader of the nation's first political party, called the Federalist Party. The Federalists, located mainly in the commercial Northeast, supported a strong national government. They laid the foundation of a national economy, created a national judicial system, and set up principles of foreign policy. But while Hamilton's public life was succeeding, his private life was running into trouble. Hamilton confessed to having an affair, to not being faithful to his wife. His oldest son fought a duel to defend Alexander Hamilton's honor and was killed. Hamilton eventually resigned from George Washington's administration, and he publicly disagreed with other politicians, including the new president, John Adams, and a man named Aaron Burr. Many who disagreed with Hamilton united in an opposition party called the Republicans, or sometimes the Democratic Republicans. Thomas Jefferson was their leader. Even though Hamilton and Jefferson disagreed about most things, in the presidential election of 1800, Hamilton supported Thomas Jefferson over the other leading candidate, Aaron Burr. Hamilton trusted Jefferson not to abuse the power of the presidency. But Aaron Burr was angry that Hamilton had cost him the election. Later, when Burr ran for governor of New York, Hamilton opposed him again. Burr challenged Hamilton to a duel. At dawn on July 11, 1804, Hamilton and Burr fought a duel on the New Jersey side of the Hudson River, near Manhattan. They fired pistols from 10 paces. Hamilton fell to the ground. He was carried to his Manhattan home and died the next day. Just 3 years earlier, Hamilton's son had been shot on the same spot. Today, Americans remember Alexander Hamilton as the architect of America's banking and economic system. He was the first Secretary of the Treasury and created America's central bank. Hamilton's system gave the new nation the ability to issue paper money, lend the government money, and promote business and industry by extending credit. Even though many disagreed with the power Hamilton gave the central government, he helped place the United States on an equal financial footing with the nations of Europe. And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.